You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be running out the door.
Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste. You fry it. You make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil. You shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce. Potatoes,
yeah. I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. How are you doing this evening? Did you make it to a farmer's market this weekend? I went to the Sebastopol Farmer's Market today. There were, oh gosh, there must have been 8 or 10 vendors. Absolute troopers. And I figure if they're out there in the rain, so am I. Came home with some really good stuff, too. Anyway, welcome. Thanks for tuning in. We have a great show tonight. It's a show I've wanted for years, and finally things came together, and I made myself do it. On that note, I want to introduce Sally Fallon, founding president of the Weston A. Price Foundation and co-author, along with Mary Enig, of Nourishing Traditions, the cookbook that challenges politically correct nutrition and the diet dictocrats. Sally, welcome to Mouthful.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You bet. We should say you are talking from Washington, D.C.
That's right, yes.
And you have a cold. I hope it's a short-lived one.
I would never admit I have a cold.
Okay, you don't. You have allergies. They're really bad this year.
I've just had a long weekend. Let's put it like that.
Okay. We also have here in the studio with us your colleague, Ann Fisher-Silva, the head of the local chapter of the Weston A. Price Foundation and a clinical nutritionist. Thanks for being here, Ann.
Thanks so much for having me, Michelle. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Ann.
Well, I want to start first by saying that it seems to me that Weston A. Price Foundation is getting more and more press and just coming up more and more in conversations since I interviewed you, I guess it was about 6 weeks ago, for that article. At least half a dozen people who've not previously mentioned the foundation have. I've just noticed it coming up in various places. So I'd like to start with you telling us about the foundation and what it is.
Well, the foundation is a nonprofit foundation. We're an educational organization, and we were founded to provide accurate information about nutrition. We felt that we needed an organization that had no ties with the food industry, no ties with any government agency, so that we could say the truth about nutrition. Mary Enig and I were the founders, and we were particularly concerned about the misinformation going out there as it applied to diets for children. Children need good, high-fat, high-cholesterol diets to develop normally, and we're seeing the tragic results of the low-fat message in our children today. So we were founded in 1999, and we have now over 400 local chapters, and Ann is our local chapter in Santa Rosa. We have a number of them in California, and the local chapters do a lot of things, but the main one is keep a resource list. So when people are looking for the types of food that we recommend, which ranges from grass-fed meats and eggs to raw milk, they would call their local chapter, and the local chapter would provide them with a resource list.
When you talk about the low-fat, the problems of low-fat diet in children, could you elaborate on that just a little bit?
Well, children need, first of all, a lot of cholesterol for growth and development. Mother's milk is extremely rich in cholesterol, and it has a special enzyme to help the infant absorb all that cholesterol. The baby needs cholesterol for the development of the brain and the second brain, which is the stomach, the gut, and the intestinal tract. And what we're seeing today is connections not being formed in the brain and all sorts of leaky guts and digestive problems in our children. And this is largely because the children are not getting these very rich foods as they grow. And these foods are needed, you know, right through growth. And this is up to 18, even 21 years of age. And then they're needed for other reasons. But we also try to clear the air and provide accurate information about fats and oils and teach people that saturated fats that we find in butter and lard and meat fats and coconut oil are not villains. They are very important components of the diet.
When we were talking before, you mentioned when things started that you can trace it back to, if I remember correctly, 1913 and the efforts of Crisco.
Yes, Crisco was developed by Procter & Gamble. Is that correct? Yes. Uh-huh. And they developed this product out of cottonseed oil. So it was developed out of a waste product, really, which is cottonseeds. And to market it, they published a Crisco cookbook in which they said that women who use Crisco instead of lard were more modern. Their houses would smell better. They were just more with it, and their children would have better characters if they used Crisco instead of lard. And this was very subtle and very, very effective. And it's the kind of misinformation and appeal to the wrong things that's been going on for decades.
Yeah, they started first in the South, right, getting lard out of the kitchens in the South.
Right. The South was a big target. First of all, that's where the cottonseed oil came from. And mm-hmm. secondly, they used a lot of fats in frying.
Mm-hmm.
The other target was the Jewish community. And this is my co-author and our founder, Mary Enig, is Jewish. And she was just incensed that they had targeted the Jewish community. You know, because they said you can use this for kosher cooking. You don't have to worry about whether you mix this with meat or cheese or what. And she believes that it's one of the main sources of some of these real important serious health problems that you find in the Jewish community.
And then things picked up steam, it seemed, in the 60s and the 70s with starting to turn, you know, people against saturated fats?
Right. After the Second World War, they actually built a number of factories to hydrogenate vegetable oils like corn oil during the Second World War with the thought that these things could be used for gasoline. And when the war was over, they didn't need them for gasoline.
So, might as well feed them to people, huh?
Yeah, why not just feed them to people? And even the very early research showed that these things were just awful, that they did not support life. They caused cancer, they caused heart disease, but the industry just barreled ahead. And it's a very powerful lobby that works behind the scenes to change people's perceptions about things.
And so how did Weston Price coincide with your efforts? Weston Price, he was a dentist working the 20s and 30s?
Yeah, he died in 1948, so he saw this coming on and predicted, you know, an epidemic of health problems as people switch from animal fats to vegetable oils and partially hydrogenated vegetable oils. And he traveled all over the world looking at healthy traditional peoples. And one of the things he noted was the emphasis on the rich and high cholesterol, high fat portions of the animal. People ate the organ meats, the livers, the liver oils. They ate the fat of the animals. And, you know, this is what's gone away. People are afraid of these foods now.
Yeah, they're hugely afraid all the time. Even people that you think are fairly sophisticated. It seems that this idea, and I really want to Anne to come in here as well as you want, Anne, that myth that saturated fat is really bad for you, and if you have like even a tiny bit of butter, at best it's a guilty pleasure. So do you see from your vantage point with the foundation that pendulum swinging very much at all? And you, Anne, let's see what you have to say.
I definitely do. In January, in the American Journal for Clinical Nutrition, there was a meta-analysis study that came out that really looked at fat consumption and the relationship between dietary fat and cardiovascular disease, stroke, and heart disease. And they clearly said that there is no link between dietary fat and heart disease. So I think that it is finally happening. You know, will the doctor stop writing prescriptions for Lipitor?
Exactly.
I don't know.
That's remarkable. That didn't make headlines or top of the news on radio.
Not mainstream.
No. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's one of the things we try to do, is bring to people's attention the science that does not get to the front page of the papers. We have a journal, and as Anne can tell you, we try to keep people up to date with the latest studies and show how a lot of research, a lot of honest research that doesn't get publicized, truly validates the traditional food ways of, healthy people.
As a nutritionist, I also often explain to people that I look at hormones a lot, and most of our hormones, sex hormones, are all the steroidal hormones are built from cholesterol. So mm-hmm. How can we have healthy hormonal systems if we don't start with the right resources?
Yeah, interesting. There's we could talk about, I think we could go for hours talking about general nutrition, but there's two discrete areas that I wanted you to talk about that you're working on. One of them is soy, and I think of you, this might be the wrong way to put it, but for a long time I've thought of you as sort of a clearinghouse for really good information about the dangers of soy. And I'd like you to talk about that, and also how that ties in with the lawsuit against the Department of Corrections in Illinois.
Right. Well, our website has been a source of information about the dangers of soy foods. Now, we're not talking about traditional Asian fermented soy foods consumed in very small amounts the way they are done in Asia, but the soy proteins, the soy milks, and the inappropriate use of things like tofu. And we've actually interfaced with the government on this a number of times. We were able to stop a soy health claim, a claim that soy prevented cancer, by showing all the research indicating that soy causes cancer, especially breast cancer. So we started hearing from prisoners in the state of Illinois. In 2003, the Department of Corrections switched to a mostly soy diet, and the prisoners had been fairly healthy up to then. They got a lot of meat and things like liver in their diet. And when they switched to the soy, they started to experience very, very serious health problems almost immediately, especially digestive problems, pain on eating, constipation, terrible constipation, diarrhea, debilitating diarrhea, passing out when eating, vomiting when eating, and then the things like thyroid problems, hormonal problems. And so, to make a long story short, we eventually filed a lawsuit against the Illinois Department of Corrections, and we are asking for an injunction against the serving of soy as being unconstitutional, causing pain and suffering, and not being nourishing to the prisoners.
And what's the status of the suit at this point?
The suit is going forward. We've had a lot of motions to dismiss and things like that, and we have answered all those. So I think we'll go to trial next year.
Great. Now, is it possible in sort of a nutshell to summarize the problems of modern soy?
You know, Anne might like to answer that just with her patients, with her clients.
Okay.
She sees.
Yeah.
Well, what I find is in doing a lot of food intolerance testing, number one, I would say probably 90% of the people that I test come back positive to soy antibody positive. So, you know, the idea that we can take a food that hasn't been in our food chain as a Caucasian person mm-hmm. and consume that is sort of crazy. That's number one. Soy is also an endocrine disruptor. So it really will disrupt the thyroid to a large degree. Mm-hmm. The other aspect of soy, when eaten in the ways that Sally talked about, it will block mineral absorption. So you can eat a really healthy diet, but if you put soy in there, you're not going to get any of your minerals.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Then there's the estrogenic effect.
Mm-hmm. You know? Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. The men over time develop breasts and...
kids, you know, babies.
Yeah. The you know, there's a lot of young men in prison who are actually innocent or who've committed, you know, not very serious crimes. You know, eating soy for 3 or 4 years like that causes what they refer to as chemical castration. And that's cruel and unusual punishment.
No kidding. Where else, I think I know that there's a pretty hefty soy industry.
Oh,
and that, I mean, soy oil in all of the prepared foods and the byproduct that makes this soy protein. Where else are they looking to sort of sell this huge amount of soy product?
I'm glad that you mentioned that it's a byproduct, because that's exactly what these soy foods are. They are byproducts. They're a waste product of the soy oil industry. And the industry at first had hoped to aim this these soy powders and soy protein at the upscale market, and it was touted as a health food. And this has not worked very well for them. They had expected soy sales to be $8 billion by now. They're at about $4 billion, and most of that is to institutions. So they have not succeeded in a lot of sales with the upscale market. People have figured out that this stuff is toxic and causes a lot of problems, and so they've started putting it in children's lunches, in the prisons, in
children's
the hospitals.
Lunches.
Yeah.
And hospitals?
Yes. Well, and sure.
Yeah, and hospitals still seem to, you know, go for that low fat, you know, thing. Yeah.
Right.
If you visit somebody in the hospital and see what they get to eat, it's like, oh my God.
Shocking, yeah.
Yeah. Listen, Sally, I know that you've had a really long weekend and that your voice is challenging you tonight. Before
you.
I let you go, I would really like you to tell people about your cookbook, Nourishing Traditions. I could not bring my copy in because, yet again, I have given it away. Every time I buy that book, I give it to somebody, and I haven't gone out to get another one yet, but I will. So talk about that book a little bit,
please. Well, Nourishing Traditions was written to make the findings of Dr. Price more public-friendly, more accessible, and to combine it as a cookbook. So it's as you say, it's a pretty hefty book. It's everything from soup to nuts to baby formula, always with his findings in mind to maximize nutrition from our food. So we put a lot of emphasis on how we prepare the foods to maximize nutrition. And it came out in 1996, yeah. And, you know, it's just sold steadily ever since, mostly by word of mouth. So it's been a kind of surprising phenomena, even to me.
Now, I always see it when I go into our local bookstore in Sonoma County, Copperfields. But if anyone has trouble getting it, is it available at the Weston A. Price website?
No, it's available on Amazon, of course.
Okay.
But I have a website for Nourishing Traditions and other books. It's called New Trends Publishing.
New Trends Publishing.
T-R-E-N-D-S. NewTrendsPublishing.com.
Publishing.com. And Weston A. Price, what is that website?
It's WestonAPrice.org. It is a website just loaded with information. Use the Google search on the website if you're looking for something specific. And you can become a member online, order materials, and post comments. So I really recommend that people do pay a visit to the website.
And if you become a member, then you get, is it a quarterly journal?
Yes.
And email updates?
Yes, comes out quarterly.
Uh-huh. Well, you also, we should say, you have relatives here in Sonoma County.
Yes, and my family is all there.
Well, sometime when you come into town for a visit, would you come into the studio on Raffle? I'd love to talk to you again face to face.
I sure will, and hopefully my voice will be in better better health at that time.
Okay, well, Sally, I hope you feel lots better, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, and Anne can, you know, she's very knowledgeable, so she can continue answering your questions.
Bye, Sally. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
And take care.
Bye-bye.
It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan here on KRCB. That was our conversation with Sally Fallon. Again, she is the founding president of the Weston A. Price Foundation and co-author of Nourishing Traditions. Here in the studio with me is Anne Fisher-Silva, a clinical nutritionist and the head of the local chapter of the Weston A. Price Foundation. Do people use the local chapter as a resource, or do they join? Can you have membership in the local chapter?
Absolutely. There's no membership required. Mm-hmm. Most people contact me through the website, through the WestonAPrice.org website. There's a list of local chapter leaders there. And so quite often I'll get an email weekly, several times a week, asking mm-hmm. for local resources, where to find grass-fed beef. A lot of people looking for raw milk.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big one.
And can you find it?
Mm-hmm.
You can.
We do have several sources of raw milk here in Sonoma County. We're very lucky.
I've started looking for it just since we talked. I used to drink raw milk all the time. It was really easy to find. But since it's been on my mind again, and I had a long talk with Lou Preston. You must know Lou.
Yes.
Lou, and we were talking about, mostly about his homemade kefir. But he was talking about raw milk, and I thought, okay, I got to start looking and see. And I shop in good markets. Haven't seen it yet.
Interestingly, Whole Foods did sell it, but they stopped selling it because of what they said was an increased liability.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, and I shop in locally. You know, I go to...
Oliver's has it.
Oliver's. Okay, hadn't gotten to Oliver's yet because there's no Oliver's in Sebastopol. Oh, Andy's.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you can put people in direct contact with...
Absolutely. You can't really buy raw milk from mm-hmm. a farmer, but you mm-hmm. can participate in a herd share program.
Uh-huh. Sort of like a CSA.
Yes.
For
milk.
Except you... For a cow.
That's right.
What other sort of things does... What other sort of resources are you able to provide for people interested in...
If they're looking for various... types of traditional foods, and those mm-hmm. would be things like how do you make a bone broth, mm-hmm. which is sort of one of the basics of Weston Price type eating. How do you prepare nuts? How do you make kefir? How do you make sauerkraut? You know, lots of fermented type foods. Mm-hmm. Those are the kind of things that are sort of the basics of eating a la Weston Price.
Mm-hmm. And what's the importance of fermentation, and especially making your own sauerkraut rather than going and buying some in the deli section of your market?
A lot of those are made in the store are made with vinegar, and we recommend lacto-fermentation for all of the vegetables. And really, most indigenous cultures have included some sort of fermented vegetable as a mm-hmm. digestive aid with the meal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see it, well, obviously, in, say, Korea.
Yes.
Kimchi.
Right.
But you see it all, you know, I mean, Germany sauerkraut.
The Japanese.
Japanese, all their little fermented things. Oh, God, it's nothing like a Japanese breakfast, you know, where you might be served things you have no idea what they are, but they all taste so good and feel great.
Yeah.
I just love Japanese breakfast.
Clean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clean wakes you up. So about how many people do you think in, I mean, I don't know, membership isn't required. So how many people do you think are involved in the local chapter of Weston A. Price?
Well, we have an online Yahoo group where we disseminate information and talk about local resources, upcoming events, that kind of thing. And that's a really great place to get plugged in. Mm-hmm. We also have a monthly potluck where we might have 30 people a month, where we just come and have really great food and bring in local producers to talk about how they raise and grow their food. And then we might do farm tours and things like that, too.
You go, that's great. That's cool. And then how does this dovetail with your work as a nutritionist?
I came across Nourishing Traditions about 12 years ago. A colleague handed me a copy of it, and it completely rocked my world. And I have been using it in my practice ever since. Uh-huh. And I find that those clients that really embrace that book get well.
Oh, interesting.
And it's really served the test of time for me, both personally and with my clients. It just makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. Looking back at how people ate food prior to 150 years ago, it just seems like that's the way we should be eating, too.
Mm-hmm. In your practice, I mean, we hear so much about the increase of diabetes, obesity. I mean, obesity, when I was growing up, I mean, I remember, I don't want to single anyone out, so I won't say their name, but where I was growing up, there was one fat family. One. And it must have been genetic. I mean, the mother was very large, and her two daughters were very large. That was it.
Yeah.
You know, there was certainly, everybody didn't look the same, but the parameters were much narrower. And suddenly, it looks different, you know. The landscape of people looks really different. And it seems to me that it's run parallel with an increasing phobia about fat. So what's going on?
Well, I think that that's a big part of it. And I also think it's the deluge of processed foods that people are eating. I think between those two things, you take the macronutrient fat out of the diet. What are you going to eat? You're going to eat more carbs. And that's really what happens.
Yeah. So people fill themselves up on simple carbohydrates.
A carb, you need to fuel all the time because it doesn't stay with you. You know, you burn through it or you store it as fat and you're hungry again. So, of course, you're going to eat more calories. Whereas if you eat fat, it's like putting a big log on the fire. It's going to burn low and slow and really give you sustained energy.
And that's a great way to put it. And you can just, I mean, you think about the joke, people go out for Chinese food and they're hungry an hour later. You know, what do you eat? You eat a lot of fried rice. You eat a lot of rice. You eat a lot of carbohydrates.
That's it. Right. Right. So I find that's probably the biggest issue in trying to get people to wrap their head around that. It is coming around. I think that more and more people are realizing that fat is not the enemy. But then there's, what type of fat are you eating? Does it mean that you should eat more margarine now?
No. Well, let's talk about that. A lot of that has to do with the presence of fat-soluble vitamins, right? Where are fat-soluble? They're an animal fat.
Correct.
Let's talk about that. I think that's really interesting, and that seems to be something that just is going right over the heads of even, I have to say, you're the first nutritionist I've ever talked to who's like, wow, you're not a nut.
Thank you.
You know, most nutritionists that I've encountered, they're very much cookie cutter. You know, no saturated fat, cut saturated fat out of your diet.
And right.
This, so it's you're so refreshing. It's wonderful.
Thanks. You know, it really goes back to what Sally was talking about with the organ meats. That's where the real intense fat-soluble nutrients are found. And we've taken those all out of the diet. You know, Weston Price Foundation is really big on eating those types of foods again. Well, if you're going to eat liver, you really have to make sure that you're finding a clean source of that.
Yeah, because liver takes the toxins out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's going to, if you're getting something that's been fed really badly, they're going to be concentrated in the liver.
If you're going to eat a filtering organ, you want to make sure that it's a really clean organ. But in those organs are the intense fat soluble nutrients. And the other thing that I often think about is the vitamin D as well. Not only in sunshine, but vitamin D is also in egg yolks and liver and all of those, you know, real dense, fat-laden meats. Mm-hmm. And nobody's eating those anymore.
And so we're seeing all the associated health problems come from that. You know, one thing this just reminded me of when Sally said it, and you just said it, having, you know, needing the organ meats, needing the liver. Remember the book, Never Cry Wolf?
Yes.
I just wrote that down because it's like he was trying to live just as he saw the wolves living. And I remember for a while he was eating mice, but he wasn't eating all of the parts. And I just remember his health improved.
Yeah.
When I forget exactly what part it was, but it was clearly adding the fat, concentrated fat of the mouse into his diet made things get better.
Well, we've really changed the way we look at what we harvest from an animal. Traditionally, societies valued all of the organ meats first.
Everything you had to, yeah.
They didn't go for the flesh meat. Yeah. Oftentimes, they'd feed that to the dogs.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And they were
now
really...
Now it's the opposite.
It is. It is.
I tried to buy lamb's tongue, and they said, oh, God, you should have called 2 hours ago. It's gone into the pet food.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. That's really interesting.
I often think about that movie, Dancing with Wolves, when he goes off on the harvest with the Native Americans, and they kill a bison or something. And the first thing he does is cut it open, and they take out the heart, and they cut it up, and every piece goes out to everyone in the tribe. Mm-hmm. And it's that concept of like cures like. A little bit of heart tissue will make your heart healthy.
Mm-hmm. So when you have your clients who come to you as a nutritionist, are they open to these? I mean,
it's a process.
What are some of the steps you take to?
It really depends on where they start. Okay. If they are coming right out of, you know, the standard American diet, the SAD diet. Mm-hmm. I don't go right away into that. You know, I'll start just increasing protein, getting them on some healthy fats, getting them on some coconut oil, maybe some cod liver oil.
Talk about coconut oil. I found that really, I went to Malaysia and it was really, I think at the peak of the hysteria about fats, about saturated fats. And everywhere I went in Malaysia, first of all, the people had such incredibly gorgeous skin.
Mm-hmm.
And my host.
And hair.
Yes, and hair. And my host, at one point he told me, we were talking about age and he was talking about his kids. I had pegged him at somewhere between 27 and 28, 30 absolute maximum. And I told him, and he looked at me, he says, I'm 54.
Oh, wow.
I mean, his skin was so rich and beautiful. I don't want to say no wrinkles because that makes it sound like aging is a bad thing.
Right.
And I don't believe that. But there were no wrinkles. I mean, he just had glowing, beautiful, moistured skin. And he said, it's our coconut palm oil.
Yeah.
And that was right around the same time I started hearing a little bit about how beneficial it was for people with HIV and AIDS.
It's antimicrobial, antifungal. It's really a great thing to even feed your dog. You know, it keeps fleas away.
Really?
It's full of lauric acid, which is incredibly nourishing for us. I just think it's a perfect food. I use it as a skin cream.
Coconut oil. Mm-hmm. Where do you get it? What is there a brand that people should look for? How could I've found it a little bit difficult to find.
Wilderness Family Naturals is my favorite brand, but you can also find Tropical Traditions is another brand. You can find those on Amazon.
Okay.
If you want to get it, I buy it in bulk, so that's usually
bulk.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay, that's great. And so you use it for cooking. Does a heat alter the benefits?
It will, but it also has a fairly high heat set point, okay.
so it's good for stir frying.
Great, yeah.
And then you also mentioned cod liver oil, and I know Sally is a great advocate of cod liver oil,
yeah.
And that's one of those nightmare terms from childhood, and I think it was even like cartoons. I don't know, you know, kids were running and being forced to take cod liver oil. So let's talk about that.
Well, I think traditionally, moms would line the kids up with a teaspoon and a bottle, and everybody had a shot, you know, and it was just, you did it for health. Mm-hmm. It's full of those fat-soluble vitamins and vitamin D. Mm-hmm. And today there's a company called, I'm blanking on it right now. I'll think of it in a minute. But they're doing fermented cod liver oil, which is such a beautiful concept when you think about it, because there's no processing involved. It's not ever heated. And it's fermented, so it won't go rancid.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
It's from the liver.
It is.
Of the codfish.
He does white fish. There are like 12 different varietals that he uses. And he also makes skate oil.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they're incredibly healthy. They they really have a lot of nutrients that we're just not getting in our diet.
And then how do you use them?
Well, it comes in a couple different forms. You just either shoot it, you know, that
so
way.
So you take it as a supplement.
Yeah. And I have to admit that I really can't tolerate the taste very well. So
I was wondering about that.
It comes in a capsule, too.
Oh, it does. Yes. Okay. Yeah. And that's okay.
Yes.
Okay. Let's move on to other supplements, because one of the things that seems to me is really growing. I was astonished when I stood before the supplement shelves at a local market. I was like, you could just take things off that shelf and never, ever eat real food. It was
not a good idea.
No, and it was sort of frightening. There were things like green supplements and just stuff that blew my mind. Yeah. So is that a place to look for good nutrition?
Well, food is always primary nutrition in my book.
Real food?
Real food, yeah.
Not stuff that's been dried and ground and combined in other forms.
Or powdered or anything like that. That's really, you have to start with a good diet. Mm-hmm. You know, you really can't nourish yourself if you're not eating food and quality food. Mm-hmm. Supplements, I use supplements for working with specific conditions. I don't really recommend that people take handfuls of supplements just because they want to cover all their bases. Mm-hmm. That's what we eat for. Mm-hmm. You know, really, that's what food is for. And I use supplements just to rebalance biochemistry.
Mm-hmm. And how do you research that? I mean, how do you know if somebody's out of balance in some way?
I look at blood chemistries.
Okay.
I do a lot of hormone testing, saliva testing. I do hair mineral tissue analysis, looking at what's being excreted in the hair. A variety of different testing methods. Mm-hmm.
And so that will reveal what's missing.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And for someone who has, this is such new territory for me. I'm sort of the antithesis of micromanaging. I always tell people, you know, go to your farmer's market. Don't be stupid.
That's right.
You know, just use your common sense, eat stuff that tastes good, and buy it locally. I find what you do so interesting. If somebody really does need nutritional help, maybe they just don't feel good, you know, and maybe they're completely overloaded with stress. How long does it take when somebody starts to pay sort of attention and take your advice and start shifting things? When do they start to see a change?
That's a really good question. We are all so different. There really isn't one answer for that. Yeah. It depends on how you handle stress. Some people, I tell people, some people have the capacity of the ocean to handle stress and whatever stress means to you. Mm-hmm. And some people have a thimble full of capacity. So, you know, it really depends on how you're hardwired and how you walk through the world. Uh-huh. Some people in 3 months are feeling fabulous. And some people who are incredibly depleted, it might take up to a year.
Oh, okay. I think we're going to take one more musical break here and come back with more talk with Ann Fisher Silva.
I'll be with you in apple blossom time. I'll be with you to change your name to mine. you come and say, happy is the bride, the sun shines on today. What a wonderful wedding there's gonna be. What a wonderful day for you and me. Church bells will chime. You will be mine. An apple blossom with time.
Support for Mouthful on KRCB-FM comes from our members and from Peter Lowell's Cafe in Sebastopol, offering Pinot and Pizza Tuesday evening. And each Wednesday is Locals Night. Brunch served Saturday and Sunday. Rustic Italian atmosphere at Peter Lowell's Cafe, online at peterlowells.com. 3 decades after opening Restaurant Nora, the nation's first certified organic restaurant, Nora Pion continues to advocate a holistic organic lifestyle that is the foundation for both her cuisine and her commitment to living and eating sustainably. Nora is a documentary making its West Coast public television debut on KRCB Channel 22, Wednesday, April 28th at 9 p.m. Now back to Mouthful. Michelle?
Thanks, Lawrence. I found my notes that I took while I was standing in front of the supplement section. Let's see, there was a big section of green foods, something called Green Vibrance, Health Forum Superfoods, Super Hemp Protein. But one of the ones that really caught my eye, other than the body lotion that reduced stress.
Oh, that's frightening.
Yes. That was something called, it was a powder, and it was called The Ultimate Meal.
Oh, my gosh.
And I never did see what it contained. That was in really small print. But in really big print, it said, no GMO, no soy, no cholesterol, no egg, no whey, no wheat, no gluten, no sugar, no fructose.
No food.
It's like people with... I just feel so sorry for people with these food issues. Mm-hmm. It seems like they're so afraid and they're looking for... that little answer in a pill or a powder, so nothing scares them.
Well, I mean, those conditions are very real. But the way I think about it is people are looking for something that's fast and easy. They don't really want to take the time to prepare food.
Yeah.
And so if they can make a shake and put everything in a blender, I mean, how easy would that be? The problem is you have to really look at how those things are formulated. As Sally was talking about with the soy protein powders, for the most part, are isolates. And they've isolated out one component, the protein of soy or whey or whatever the protein powder is. Sometimes it's rice. And that isn't something, that fractionated protein is not something that our body really recognizes as food.
Mm-hmm.
And it can set up a whole series of leaky gut kind of reactions because our body is not processing as it would normally a protein. So, that's true of all of those types of supplements.
Mm-hmm. So you want food.
Food.
That's so perfect to say on Mouthful. I'm a big advocate of food. And you know, cooking is one of the best cures for stress.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And I knew this from a really, really early age. It's something I knew intuitively, not because I learned it from my mother, trust me, but I just found comfort.
Mm-hmm. So how do we teach people that? How do we get people into the kitchen cooking real food?
Well, I think one of the ways is, you know, you drop a very strategic weapon on the TV Food Network, but don't quote me. I think one of the things that has happened, I mean, we're food obsessed. This culture is food obsessed. We're obsessed with what we shouldn't eat. But we're also obsessed with what other people eat and what people who get to go to what is perceived as the hottest new restaurant get to eat. And I think at the same time we've become obsessed about what might be bad for us, we're also obsessed with watching, we're obsessed with thinking that other people can cook better than we can, that you have to be a chef to cook good food. And it's made us into a nation of spectators when it comes to food. And if you go to Europe, you know that's so not true.
Mm-hmm.
Almost anywhere else in the world, except maybe England, which I think is suffering to some degree in the same way that we are with this food as spectator sport. So I think we have to somehow get that pendulum to swing back.
Well, I think it started really in the 50s with all of the convenience foods, the frozen foods, and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And nobody ever questioned whether there was mm-hmm. a nutritional difference in those foods.
Yeah.
It was a convenience to the women that were entering the workforce.
Yeah, and then absolutely.
And, you know, and now here we are. We now have one or two generations of people that don't know how to boil water.
Yeah, that's really true.
And so to bring them back into the kitchen mm. is huge. And I also think that the piece that's missing is the connection around the table.
Yes,
that goes with cooking.
Yes, I completely agree. We're raising a huge number of people, millions of kids that don't know what breakfast, lunch, and dinner mm-hmm. around the family table mm-hmm. is like. They don't know the pleasures of the table. Some of them have never shared a meal. It's really sad.
It is. It is.
It's really sad. And I think I actually saw Alice Waters on Bill Maher, which was really interesting. Bill Maher pre-taped a show, and he had Chris Rock, Alice Waters, and maybe somebody else, I'm not sure. And
I saw that. It was great.
It was. And I mean, it partly showed what an idiot someone like Bill Maher can be about food. Mm-hmm. I mean, you think of him, he's fairly smart mm-hmm. and well informed about things, but he had this huge blind spot in his head about food. And it was very interesting to see. I mean, Alice can talk to anybody on the subject, and she always pretty much says the same exact thing. You know, she beats her drum, and she beats it beautifully. Mm-hmm. She talked about the edible schoolyard and children, what children, you know, they think they're in a math class, but they're measuring, you know, the length of the rows that they're going to plant, and they're taking raspberries off the vine at the same time. So I think the whole idea of the edible schoolyard is brilliant.
I do too.
But it was interesting to see someone who does keep himself informed, see someone so incredibly misinformed. I mean, he even said, well, yeah, but what about poor families? I mean, if you're that poor, you know, your only alternative, you have to go to McDonald's.
That's so not true.
Yeah, I was surprised.
Well, he's obviously never been into a kitchen either.
No, I don't think he has. He also said there's no such thing as a good peach anymore. Every time I bite into a peach, it's dry and awful. And you know, he had a lot of misinformation.
Yeah,
and
that's too bad.
I was surprised. I thought mm-hmm. it was really enlightening to see that,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully his audience saw that too. So there's so much to be done, but I mean, invite people to dinner.
I do.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of it.
It is.
Feed people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think this culture really we have to return to home cooking. You know, home cooking has to be seen as a wonderful thing, not as
a chore.
Not as a chore mm-hmm. and not as inferior. People mm-hmm. used to go to, people went to restaurants for a lot of reasons, but not necessarily because the food was better.
I think cooking and eating in my house is often better than in a restaurant.
Yeah.
Don't you feel that way?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I go to restaurants. I mean, I have a couple of restaurants that I love mm-hmm. their food, but I go to restaurants for the social element
mm-hmm.
or because I just want a night to, I want someone to wait on me,
yeah.
you know, just, I want to, you know, and I want to be out. I want to be out. And to me, a restaurant is the experience of the commons.
Yes. You want to dine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you want to see other people. You want maybe something to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You want to maybe run into an old friend that you don't know you're going to run into and who would never show up at your door. Just that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the social aspect.
Right.
So
That's one thing. Tell me more about the Weston A. Price potlucks. Those sound interesting.
We just ask people to bring a nutrient-dense dish, something out of nourishing traditions, and we eat well. It's fun.
Mm-hmm. Where does wine come into all this?
You know, it's never really discussed.
Oh, okay.
I don't think I can answer that.
I saw something. Was it on the website? I'm not sure if it was on the Weston A. Price website, but I think it was. And it just said, you know, try to find unpasteurized wines. Drink wine. If you want wine with your meals, have wine with your meals. But, you know, the best ones are going to be unpasteurized.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed right in line
with
the philosophy.
Yeah. Not getting the nitrates and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So back to the website. Lou Preston, and I really hope we get Lou on Mouthful sometime soon. Hearing Lou talk about making kefir. And kefir, of course, is a fermented milk drink, and he makes it every day. He drinks drinks close to a quart of kefir every day.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he's making it with raw milk?
He's making it with raw milk.
Good for Lou.
He purchased his starter, and that starter, the kefir starter, just continues to grow.
That's
and
right.
grow. So he gives it away. But he also talked about something, and I'm pretty sure he said he found it on the Weston A. Price website. Kefir sodas. And you take fruit juice, and he has a lot of strawberries at the winery. So he'll puree strawberries, and then I guess you rinse off the kefir starter. I mean, you're not putting the kefir in, just putting the starter in. And I think he said in 24 hours it will have fermented the fruit juice. And it's soda, only, you know, it's not a soda. It's fermented, but pure fruit juice. And it just sounded so good. Does it sometimes with peaches as well, or peaches and strawberries together.
That sounds great.
Yeah, and I just can't wait for fruit season. I really want to try that.
Yeah.
And I do want to try. I don't think I can, drink a quart of kefir a day.
No, that's a lot.
That's
much as I love raw milk.
Yeah, I like kefir a lot. I like it plain. I don't like fruit flavored. I like
it
actually with a little hot sauce and black pepper, but I have a real savory palate. Let's talk a little bit too about making sauerkraut. We have just a few minutes left, and I think sauerkraut might be one of the easiest things to get people to start doing their own fermentation at home.
Sauerkraut is the easiest thing in the world to make. You just chop up cabbage very, very finely. And I like to add things like ginger.
In the fermentation process?
Yeah, I add ginger.
Oh, interesting.
And I'll shred carrots and put that in there. It makes a really nice, interesting mix. Mm-hmm. And you just pound it until all the water comes up and covers it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're salting the layers as you build it up. You can either do it in a crock, or you could do it in a big half-gallon size jar.
Mm-hmm.
Sally would say to add whey.
Oh, really?
Yeah, to include that lacto-fermentation into it. I prefer mine without whey.
Mm-hmm.
So I just allow the salt to ferment it.
Uh-huh.
And it's the easiest thing in the world. And yet you end up with just this lovely little side dish for all of your meals that's really healthy.
It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get really good cabbage, which you can
Tierra
find.
Tierra vegetables.
Oh, Tierra vegetables.
Really good cabbage,
yeah.
Yes.
And I know Cliff Silva of Ma and Pa's used to have the most incredible cabbage, but I haven't seen him with cabbage lately.
Another really fun thing to do is to add Tierra vegetables chipotle powder.
Oh, chipotle powder.
Oh, yeah.
I live on chipotle powder. It goes into many, many things. Mm-hmm. Well, how do people find you?
I have a website, anewleafnutrition.net.
anewleafnutrition.net.
.net.
Mm-hmm. And that has all contact. You have an office in Petaluma and an office in Cloverdale?
That's right.
And then for Weston A. Price, it's just westonaprice.org.
Correct.
And you can click on through to any local chapter.
A wealth of information. You can find the local chapter there, and we welcome anybody to join us at a potluck.
And then one thing we should just touch on this a little bit. You're also an esthetician.
I am.
I
do holistic skincare.
Okay. So
yeah.
We've got a couple of minutes. Tell us about it. What does that mean?
That means really nourishing the skin from the inside and out, and using products that don't contain chemicals, mm-hmm. and just protecting your skin naturally.
And does that involve facials now and then?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's, you know, if you have a lot of stress, get a facial.
That's what I say.
A facial and a foot massage. Those are two things that will
You're
just...
You're done with the stress. It's
exactly.
over. I know.
Yes. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you,
It's
Michelle.
Been great to talk to you. I find the whole, I'm so glad we finally got to Weston A. Price. I hope it's not going to be the last visit. I really love that more and more people are talking about the organization and looking to it. Maybe nutritional wisdom is going to trump all the foolishness we've been dealing with for so long. If you have soy milk in your refrigerator, do me a favor.
Dump it out.
Go pour it down the drain.
Really, dump it out.
Don't do that anymore. And on that note, thanks so much for tuning in. You can always go to Facebook and become a fan of Mouthful. I post updates. And I also post, I'll be posting all the links that tonight's guest gave us. And then I'll let you know what's going on next week as well. Have a great week. Meet me back here next Sunday at 7 for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour here on KRCB.
Just say it.